Hello everyone, welcome to the Writivism Podcast. I am your host, Esther. This episode was recorded at Africa Writes Festival in London at a panel titled Literary Innovation in East Africa. It was chaired by Kali Kotzie, and we had our Unbreakable Bonds fiction contributor, Marcel Akita Mateki, Sumaya Lee, and Sitawa Namwali.
Welcome everybody to Africa Writes, to Sunday of our great festival, and it's lovely to see you here this morning. My name is Caitlin Pearson, and I'm your moderator for this session entitled Literary Innovation from East Africa. And I'm joined by a great panel of speakers, Sitawa Namwali, Sumaya Lee, Louise Omotoni, and Muthoni Garland. And this event is partly a result of a partnership that we have with the British Council. So Royal African Society is the organisation that presents Africa Writes, and we have a strategic partnership with the British Council, which is the basis of some of what we'll be sharing today. So please join the conversation on Twitter by following Africa Writes UK, and use the hashtag Africa Writes 2019 in your tweets. You can also give us your feedback. The link is just up there behind me, and you can speak to one of our volunteers outside who will show you a tablet where you can enter the information. You can win a beautiful hamper of books if you enter the prize draw for that. So I have to give a plug for the Royal African Society and ask you to please join us as a member. You can sign up outside, and you'll be helping to support the work we do. We're a pan-African membership charity focused on promoting Africa in the UK. I'm just going to start the session today by speaking about a trip that myself and Marcel, who is the voice of Africa Writes this year, that we went on in March. So this was part of a programme run by the British Council called Festivals in Motion, and their aim is to connect programmers and artists in the UK with those in East Africa. So because we run the festival in a tight budget, we don't often get chances to visit the continent as part of the project. So this was an extremely valuable opportunity, and enabled us to find out more about what's happening and what kind of creative ways people are using to engage audiences in literature. So we met some people involved in the early days of the literary scene, and some who are newer on the landscape. Marcel visited first Kigali in Rwanda, and then we both visited Nairobi in Kenya. So I'm just going to give you a couple of highlights of our trip. I have to begin with this picture of Marcel, which is taken in a bookshop in Nairobi, because we were in the process of planning the festival and were very excited to see Chigozie Obioma's book, An Orchestra of Minorities, available there. So Marcel did a whole roundup of her trip in Kigali, which you can read on our Africa Writes blog. So she met a whole range of people working in the literary space, and yeah. Yeah, so we met an organisation called Book Bunk, Shiro and Angela. So I'll just tell you their vision that they set out on their website. So we imagine that public libraries can be steered to become more than just repositories, acting as sites of knowledge production, shared experiences, cultural leadership and information exchange. We see them as sites of heritage, public art and memory. Our formation as an entity is inspired by this core belief that our shared spaces are more essential than ever to our collective Kenyan imagination. So BookBunk are working to refurbish and reinvigorate the cultural activity that's going on in some libraries in Nairobi. So they've received finance from the Nairobi County Government and permissions to fundraise and restore these three libraries: Macmillan Memorial Library, Makadara, and Kaloleni. So it's a five-year contract, and they're running activities to try and achieve their vision. They've got a great video on their website, which I encourage you to watch. We met Maimouna Jallo, who's a friend of the festival. She came here in 2017 to perform The Secret Lives of Baba Shaggy's Wives. She is involved in a lot of different things and recently put on the Reimagined Storytelling Festival. So that happened in 2018 in Kenya and brought together storytellers from across the continent to perform and engage audiences in myths and legends and contemporary tales in a performative manner. So she spoke about one of the stories called Shayla's Journey, which was launched at the festival. And it's a story of a girl's journey from Africa to the Caribbean in the era of transatlantic slavery. So the ambition is for it to become an immersive multi-arts installation one day in museums, and maybe even one day to be displayed at the new museum in Dakar. Some of the stories that were performed at this festival were compiled into a beautiful anthology called Story, 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 Come. And we had a listening for this. We had a listening session for this yesterday in the family workshop. The audio books will soon be available on Audible. The e-book is online, and it's published in hard copy. You can get a copy from that at the Africa Book Centre outside. The East and Southern Africa publisher for that book is Paivapo, run by Zikiswa Wana, and the Western area publisher is Reader Books, run by Lola Shonoyen. So I like this initiative of the anthology because it's proudly run by some of the most active and inspiring women working in the field of literature today. We're also lucky to meet Zikiswa, who runs the Artistic Encounters Programme at the Goethe Institute in Nairobi, where a lot of writers come and present their work.
Oh, yes.
Thank you, Marcel, for the prop. This is the anthology. She also told us about a really exciting project called the Afro Young Adult Project. So it's supported by 8 Goethe institutes across the continent in Johannesburg, Nairobi, Dar es Salaam, Dakar, Lomé, Kigali, Accra, and Lagos. And the aim was to figure out the gap in young adult adult fiction writing and to address it through workshopping and an anthology. So they received a massive 485 initial applications that had to be whittled down to a shortlist of 17. The best stories were workshopped in each city, and only the ones that got through were given the seal of approval by the young readers that they had on board. So it was the young adult readers who decided what would finally be in the anthology. So the resulting book will be launched at Ake Festival in Nigeria in October. Zikiswa read us an extract, which was just mind-blowing. So that is really one to check out. We were lucky to meet Story Moja Festival, who Muthoni will speak about. Story Moja Publishing House and Festival, who Muthoni will speak about in a moment. We also met James Murua, who runs the James Murua Literature Blog. If you haven't already checked this out, I'd really recommend doing so. It's an incredibly valuable resource and archive about awards, festivals, news, everything that's going on in the literary space. Subscribe to his newsletter and really definitely check out the YouTube channel, which has, it's just videos of everything that's happening. And he's your man on the ground, wherever something's going on. Just a couple more. So we met Jalada Africa. Well, we met Anne and Mora and Wanjeri Gakru, who was here yesterday, but unfortunately had to leave today. So they were speaking to us about Jalada Africa, which is a Pan-African writers collective. We had the pleasure of working with them and hosting them here in 2017. So they're pushing forward several initiatives, including publishing their 10th anthology later this year on the theme of bodies. It will be a major exploration across different mediums and a major milestone for the collective. So people should look out for the call out coming in a couple of weeks. And you can also read their latest anthology and all their work on their website, jaladaafrica.org. Sitawa, I put a picture of her. We were lucky to meet Sitawa. Well, Marcel had met her already, but it was my first time to meet Sitawa, and as a result, we were able to invite her to come for Africa Writes, and she's been speaking at various events and in the poetry night we had on Friday. So this was a great thing of the grant facilitating a connection and then us being able to to welcome to Tawatu and meet all of you guys. So the final person we spoke to was Ida Holly Nambi from Afroqueer Podcast. So there's lots of innovative forms of storytelling and dissemination that we found out about in this trip. So including Radio Book Rwanda, which is a project run by Who's Oppressed, No Bindings and Kwani, using text and audio. And we're also excited to interview Ida Holly Nambi, who is the Director of Arts and Culture at an organisation called None on Record. And None on Record runs the Afroqueer podcast. So this is a platform that exists to tell stories of queer Africans from the continent and the diaspora. It celebrates queer love, explores the laws affecting lives, migration, media, race, class, censorship, family and sex. Obviously, that's taken from their website. So along the way, the podcast also shares some bitter truths of what it means to be queer and African, but also spotlights individuals shifting the landscape of African queerness. Their research, development and editing process is collaborative and extremely rigorous, so the result is some really impactful audio storytelling, and I really recommend listening to Series 1 if you haven't already. You can learn about the oldest pride march on the continent in South Africa, queer tales from Mombasa, how people are using Grindr and dating apps, and a lot more stuff. We interviewed Ida also as part of a research report we were doing on contemporary African arts. So we recently published this, and it's called Mapping Perceptions, Insights and UK-Africa Collaborations. So we commissioned a bunch of essays, we interviewed 16 people who are leading contemporary African arts professionals. So it's literature, but also dance, architecture, fashion, music, a lot of things. And we also did a polling of audiences in the UK, so we run a YouGov poll asking people their impressions of contemporary African art and how they understand it, what does it mean, how do they engage with it. This is bringing together a lot of thinking that we've done over the last few years as an organisation, and it's aimed at arts professionals but also just people who are interested in UK-Africa collaborations. So I would encourage you to have a look. We also have podcast interviews with some of the people featured in the report on our Mixcloud account. So yeah, I feel like I've just sort of shown you my holiday snaps. I hope you got something from it. And yeah, check out our blog because we've got all of the information listed there. So now we have, rather than slides, some real people to tell us about the work that they're doing. So I'd like to introduce our speakers for today. Some of the people involved in the most interesting and exciting initiatives taking place in East Africa at the moment. So their full bios are in your programme, so I won't be reading them out, but I'll just give an introduction, a brief introduction. So we're going to begin with Writivism. So Sumaya Lee is here from Writivism, and she served on their annual short story prize and currently serves as the Writivism Mentoring and Residencies Coordinator. And also reading from the recent anthology published by Writivism called Unbreakable Bonds will be a writer, consultant, co-founder of AfriCult, and a hero of mine and our very own Africa Rights producer, Masao Mateki Akita. So I'll just hand over to Sumaya to speak about Writivism.
Hello everyone, and thank you for inviting Writivism, Caitlin, to be a part of this panel. We at Writivism are great fans of all your work, all of you. And personally, I find it inspiring hearing about how we are all stubbornly keeping stories and storytelling alive. I'm honoured to be representing Writivism here today. I first got involved with them in 2014 when I volunteered for their mentoring program. At the time, I totally fell in love with what they were doing. It aligned with my beliefs as a writer, and I've been a part of the organization ever since. For those of you unfamiliar with us, the Writivism Literary Initiative is a Ugandan-based Pan-African initiative that supports emerging writers on the continent and promotes African writing through our literary prizes, online mentoring with established writers on the continent and in the diaspora, a writer's residency program at the University of Stellenbosch in South Africa, and an annual literary festival in Uganda that involves outreach activities in schools and hospitals. This year, thanks to a New Arts, New Audiences grant funded by the British Council, we have been able to collaborate with Two Girls in a Pod and add the element of podcasts to our program. And this grant is the one that has enabled us to commission and publish this anthology, Unbreakable Bonds, which I've had a great pleasure in working with the writers of the fiction component of it. So it's the first time that we've put together an anthology that does not just include fiction, it includes non-fiction and photography as well. Unfortunately, the woman who coordinated this entire thing and copies of the anthology as well are not present today, but we're going to give you a little glimpse, hopefully enough to whet the appetite. I have a slideshow of the photographs from the anthology. I will read a part of Esther's introduction to it so you have a great idea of what it's all about, and after which Marcela Kita will treat you to an extract from her fiction contribution. Okay, so, we recently began to ask ourselves questions about what it means that our prizes are only open to writers living on the continent. Our argument has always been that we do not have enough opportunities for writers on the continent, and this is true. But what does this mean for our definition of ourselves as Pan-African? What does it mean if we accept stories of white South Africans because they live on the continent and not those of our kindred outside? Panache Chigumadze has detailed this in a beautiful long sermon, Why I'm No Longer Talking to Nigerians About Race on Africa is a Country. Reading it, even though months after we had already undertaken this project, felt reminiscent of a believer who goes to church with something weighing heavy. The pastor names exactly how the weight has been bearing upon you and everything you need to hear. If you are overzealous, you lift the chair you are seated on and shout, Amen. And so Unbreakable Bonds is our altar call. In this anthology, you will find fiction and non-fiction stories from not only the continent, but also the African diaspora in the UK. We are also interested in the stories captured by the lenses in these places, so this anthology has photography too. We hope that we are not only defining the unbreakable bonds of our shared and varied blackness across continents, but also the unbreakable bonds between fiction and non-fiction, between art forms, literature, photography, the unbreakable bonds in the presentation of art, books, exhibitions, podcasts, and what holds it all together, the will, the urge, the yearning to create and imagine worlds, possibilities, or really to present it as it is. The photographers, if you can just click.
Just scroll through.
Yeah. I'm just going to let them go through, but I'm not going to tell you which one's which. The photographers are Daniel Miserikali, Marie Ankongisha, Wasi Daniju, and Nabila Abdulmalik. It's Marie's vibrant depiction that has made it to the cover. That's our cover photo. There was something about the yellow and the big smile that just won everyone over. Photographs can freeze moments, but they can also create them. And the photographs in this anthology brilliantly do both. I'm just going to conclude from Esther's introduction. Whenever we came from holidays in my boarding primary school, one or two children would come back with accents from their visits to what they called their sponsors abroad. American accents from London, New York, or American accents from New York, or British accents from London. We were too unaware of these differences and mostly interested in the stories of what outside countries looked like. We would crowd around these kids at break time and listen and ask questions and offer our snacks to them because, like they would say, they were still adjusting to the taste of Ugandan food from their two-week stay in London. As the term got on and their accents returned from across the oceans, we lost interest in the stories until the next one. I hope that, like the kids at break time ready to give away snacks to people who might have become too foreign for here or there, you will be as taken by these stories as we were. And now I hand you over to Marcel.
So I actually wasn't going to read today, so my throat is a bit dry, but if you just bear with me for a moment. And I'm not going to give away too much about the story, but I'm really grateful that you commissioned me to write this. I really enjoyed writing this piece. For anyone who's feeling a bit sleepy this morning, just like I am, it has a bit of erotica, so hopefully that'll wake up a little. Okay. It's called Wanderings. An old photo of ours peeped through my lace underwear. At first, I tried to ignore it, but these bright oyster eyes kept staring. All these years, I was seeking your face, and you've been here this entire time, with your smiling yellow teeth caught beneath the fissures of my intimates. I parted the thongs from the hipsters to unveil our glossy faces, our temples lightly touched as we leaned into each other to take the photo. I remember this day, the warm scent of your body like fresh roasted almonds. We laughed loudly and terribly. I see our lust for laughter for ourselves. We took this on a slim digital camera, you know, the one before mobile selfies. I'm not sure whether it was yours or mine, but I remember this being one of the very few photos we allowed ourselves to take together. The luscious audacity of it. The photo surprised me. I had believed that all evidence of our friendship was destroyed, that Ahmed had made sure of it. Yet, there it was laid bare, waiting for me to discover its pinched corners and cuts along the folded lines, as though scars are something to be proud of. Sometimes I walk past the park where we took this photo, and I wonder what could have become of us if we were given the chance. I still live in Enfield, not in the same house I grew up in, of course. I had to move out when my parents found out, but I couldn't bear to leave this area. It has taken something from me that I keep searching for. My fear is I will probably die here searching. Where do you fear you will die? And for what? Maybe you're already dead. Our teachers couldn't tell us apart, remember? Though it was clear you were Somali and that, well, I wasn't. But we were both a certain shade of brown with small distinctions in our speech. Our T's not curt, but curving softly under the hesitation of our tongues. You spoke Arabic fluently as well as Somali, and I hated you for that, sometimes. I wished I was more like you, certain in who I am, certain in my Arabness. The girls used to joke about the peculiar Somali smell, an invasion, like the smell foisted its long wiry fingers up their nostrils. They'll tease about how you lot clung together like some lost tribe, and I used to join in before you. Only when I laughed at their snide comments could I hope for partial acceptance. You see, as the only black girl in my year group, I learned the wicked ways of survival, feeding off the dismissal and hatred towards my own. I laughed and all the while my soul began to crack. When I asked you why you all stuck together, you reminded me that when one has lost many in a war, who else could they cling to? That was the first time I cried myself to sleep, knowing I hated the black African I was. My soul cracked completely. We were hesitant at first, but by the end of our first term in year 10, our bodies knew each other's warmth in the harsh winter. Do you remember the first morning we woke with to the sun kissing our naked shoulders? I watched as the ball of your shoulder rolled slowly, tenderly. My eyes would follow the subtle movement, noticing little goosebumps across your clavicle, your nape. I drew longer, lighter breaths. I was transfixed and felt I could find love in this alone. You jerked when my lips calmly stroked your shoulder. You were sensitive that way, even though you denied it. Your body always gave you away. It never came easy, always one kind of resistance or another. I remember my tongue finding the edge of your hijab, wetting the rough chiffon. Traces of my saliva sunk in the navy blue fabric. We knew then, if we were to do this properly, your hijab would always have to be a dark, undetectable colour. Do you remember how it went? I thought I was so slick, like I invented the mirror. My lips would travel from yours to the hard stop of your chin, and from there I would work upwards, following the round curve of your jawline, one deliberate kiss at a time. I would linger between each kiss, pressing hard into you, my warm breath caressing you as deeply as my tight nipples craved your tongue. You would always go for my neck while my tongue fought through your hijab and bonnet to untuck your ears. My teeth would graze your neck, Your teeth would graze my neck, nibble my sharp clavicle, then your lips would melt into my skin and you had me. We didn't know what we were doing. Honestly, we had no idea. There was a beauty when we didn't try and follow the curiosity of our yearning, when the baseness of our desire controlled our fingers, our lips, and our hips. We had no examples, no guide. We were our own teachers and students.
You had no idea.
Okay, great. So now I'd like to introduce Louise Mutoni, who is the founder of Huza Press, a Rwandan-based publishing house. Over to you. Thank you.
Is it good morning or good afternoon? Good afternoon, everyone.
Morning. 15 minutes of morning then.
Okay, good morning, afternoon. It's really, really exciting to be back here again. I remember the last time I was here, I was quite large, expecting a child, so it's quite nice to be back. And I see so many familiar faces in the audience, and it's just nice to know that this is starting to feel a little bit like another home, which is really nice. So I will start potentially with some of the partnerships that we've already had, Caitlin. So when I came here the last time, we were talking about the Jalada Jalada Bus Festival? Can't remember. Anyway, it was the Jalada Mobile Festival is what it was. And essentially what we're trying to do in that project was essentially get a bunch of writers and poets on a bus and travel throughout East Africa, stopping at every little town across the region and basically just engage with the community there and expose these writers to different communities, different audiences, but then also engage those audiences in the literature there. This was a partnership between Huza Press, the Royal African Society, and Jalada itself. So it was the Rwanda component is where we really engaged with the festival. But then also we produced, we worked on a collection of poems by Burundian refugees, and that's to come out soon. And this was also funded by the New Arts, New Audiences grant, the NANA grant. What we're doing at the moment, which has already been mentioned, is also funded by the New Arts, New Audiences grant, and this is the Radio Book Rwanda books. So what we've done is partnered again with Kwani Trust, No Bindings from the UK, and produced really innovative pocket-size books, which I wish I had photos of. Because I'm quite jealous of Samaya, who had all these really cool pictures. But those are the pocket-sized books. And we've also got a number of audio versions accompanying these books, as well as podcasts. So please check them out. They're all available on that website. I think one thing that was really interesting was the partnership across East Africa to try and produce these really beautiful books. One of the things that we did was, you know, the stories are Rwandan stories, but I think what's really interesting is that the artwork is from across the region. So we've got Kenyan artists, Rwandan artists as well, who provided the cover art for the titles. More recently, it was these books were showcased at the inaugural literary component of the Brooklyn Academy for Music annual festival in the U.S. And I think that they're starting to make some waves across the world, starting with Rwanda, but then also moving to BAM and the rest of them. So we're really excited about this, and we hope to sort of keep things going with them. And then I also just want to talk about what Marcella and I discussed when she was in Rwanda. So Marcella and I did not actually meet when she was in Rwanda. She literally called me whilst I was at the airport leaving, and she was, I think, traveling the next day or something. And so we managed to get a proper conversation in those 30 minutes before I got on my flight on some of the work that we were doing in Rwanda. And it's also exciting because when I looked at some of the people that you mentioned, Caitlin, when you were doing your presentations, people like Zukiswa, people like Lola, a lot of these people have sort of worked on some of these bits of work that I'm going to talk about. So what we discussed was Huza Press introducing the literary component of the Ubumuntu Arts Festival. I'm not sure if you've heard of the Ubumuntu Arts Festival, but it's Rwanda's biggest festival. It happens every year. It's been going for about 5 years now. And it brings thousands of people into Kigali. And, you know, a lot of them are artists. A lot of people are there to perform, but then also to attend the festival. The Ubumuntu Arts Festival is committed to the notion of reminding us of our humanity. So, of course, rooted in the Rwanda genocide against the Tutsi and what happened during that period, and trying to remind us of our humanity as a people. And so the main theme of the festival is usually humanity, although they'll have different sort of sub-themes around this year, which is looking at breaking down barriers. So what we wanted to do was, we noticed well that there was not any engagement with literature throughout the festival. So there's a lot of theatre, so drama, music, but never anything from on the literature side of things. So we partnered with the Ubumuntu Festival to try and introduce this. And so there's a number of components that we're going to be running throughout the festival this year. On the one hand, we've got a Kigali Lit event. So Kigali Lit is a platform that we created with the Goethe Institute to try and bring African writers from all over the world to engage with the Rwandan audience, discuss their work. But then also we try to position another Rwandan author to sort of engage in a conversation with these writers. So this year we've got, for our inaugural literary component, we've got Lola, the author of The Secret Lives of Babasegi's Wives. So she's going to be in Kigali discussing her work, engaging with the Rwandan audience. We're hoping to get Maimuna as well. It didn't really work, but that would have been perfect. And then we've also got Spoken Word event as part of that, and we partnered with Spoken Word Rwanda to try and bring this to life. And I think Marcella also met with Diana from Spoken Word Rwanda. And with this year, they're going to have a number of Rwandan Spoken Word artists presenting their work, but they'll have a headliner who is, her name is Lebo. She's from South Africa. Have you heard of Lebo? Spoken Word?
Mashile.
Have you? Yeah, so Lebo is going to be in Kigali for the first time ever and will be sort of performing and engaging, of course, with Rwandan audiences again. And I think what's exciting about some of these platforms is just that in Rwanda, if you've engaged with Rwanda at all, you get a sense of, you know, sort of trying to come out of this slightly francophone world and engage with this audience, this Anglophone audience, but not quite sure about whether they want to venture into that space just yet. So you're always stuck in this middle ground and you don't quite know, you know, how to engage. So it's quite interesting because with these writers that we've brought in, such as Jennifer Nansubuga Makumbi, Billy Kahora, Zukiswa, Lola, you start to see the Rwandan audience sort of opened up to an understanding of what exists in this Anglophone world, and also a bit of a sort of hunger for that work. And it's quite nice to be positioned there to sort of create those linkages as well, because that's something that didn't quite exist for a long time. But then at the same time, continuing to engage with the Francophone world as well. So right after this session, we'll be launching Yolande Mukagasana's book, which was previously published in French but has been translated by Zoe Norwich, who's also here in the room. And the idea is that we can continue to have those conversations across those two different sort of languages and divides. So if you're in Kigali, if you just happen to be in Kigali next weekend, please do drop by because the festival is happening then. If you're looking for an excuse to go to Kigali or East Africa, please do come by. And I hope that, even if you don't come this year, it would be quite nice to see you come in next year. Thank you very much.
And so now I'd like to introduce Muthoni Garland, who is a founder member of the writers' collective Story Moja, which publishes books for ages 4 to 16 years. She's a writer, storyteller, literary all-round superstar, and chief judge of the Moreland Writing Scholarships. So, over to you.
Thank you, Caitlin. And thank you all for coming. We really appreciate you being here. And clearly loving African work. Story Moja, last night we had a tribute event for Binyavanga, and Story Moja actually wouldn't exist if it weren't for Binyavanga, because it was an argument with him that started us off. Because when I was one of the founder members. Well, he was kind enough to call me that, because he did the work, but he invited us to all participate. And I was very concerned as to how reliant Kwani was on donor funding, because I came from sort of the corporate world. And when I confronted Binya about this, confront is not quite the word, I was asking innocently, why don't we try and find, do a commercial sort of, have a commercial approach to selling books. And he said, Muthoni, I just want you to be for real, because there's no literary journal around the world that's not funded. And there's a reason for that. We're doing experimental work. We're taking risks. We're in a culture where even just mainstream work is not being bought. So why would they buy the kind of things that, that we're putting out? And I said, Binya, it can't be that hard to sell books. Come on. We do some market research. That's my background. Find out what people want, and then we publish it, And we found out people want small books. They want the books to cost very little money and be available in lots of places. How hard can it be? And he said, okay, you're being so arrogant. You do it, I was like, okay, fine. And got together with Dio, my partner in crime here, and a few other writers, and started Story Moja back in 2007. And needless to say, our arrogance, my God, have we been humbled? It is very hard to sell books. So we made all kinds of mistakes, because not one of us writers had ever knew a thing about publishing or been involved in publishing in any shape or form. And so it was, it's been a steep climb. And I'll tell you how steep it is, because, I don't often reflect on this. But anyway, so this was our first book. I'd just been shortlisted for the Kane Prize in 2006. And so there was a lot of press and sort of media coverage. And because of that, we thought, okay, small books, 200 shillings, which is less than £2, so a pound and something at the time. And we got it into supermarkets. Aren't we answering the brief? Anyway, so we launched with this and a little business book called Crown Your Customer, written by a newspaper columnist who is very popular, Sally Bindra. So we thought, we are going to print. And how did we figure out how many to print? We did market research sort of numbers. How many people are A, B, what if we print 1% of 1% of that, whatever. So we printed 40,000 books.
Wow.
And as you know, here, even in the UK, you don't print more than 2,000 copies. So we printed 20,000 of Tracking, 20,000 of Crown, and in my garage today, I still have... something like 10,000 copies of Tracking. So we are giving out free books. So if you go downstairs to our stall that Dio is banning, if you buy a children's book, you get a free Tracking, which is in Comic Sans, by the way. You know, just because a young man came in and said, I can design it for you. Okay, how hard can it be? Let's do it. Anyway. So when we started, like I said, it's from pure foolishness and arrogance. We got everything wrong, but the biggest thing that we couldn't have, you know, sort of anticipated was the post-election violence. So we launched December 2007, when Kenya was a very optimistic place, still sort of on a high from having toppled. Toppled our dictator Moi, so the creative scene we were sure is just going to burst open and we shall unleash our creativity upon the world and the world will never be the same again. So there we are, 2007, post-election violence breaks out. We launched with a storytelling, we called it the Nyamachoma Fiesta, which was, you know, we fool people into thinking they're coming to eat Nyama Choma, which is meat, roast meat, and then we unleash writers on them. You know, because nobody knew what a festival was, including me. We're making it up as we go along. And so we had that still. I still remember it was December 16th, and then so December 29th, immediately after the vote, the first violence, and it became worse and became worse. And all the deals we'd had with supermarkets and all that fell through because they were like, no, we can't stop. We're not taking any stock. And by the end of when we had our first anniversary of the company in September 2008, we had sold 300 books. And that was after I'd finally gotten Uchumi, the supermarkets, to agree to stock in July. And I spent my life in Uchumi supermarket aisles kind of going, have you read an African book? My name is Madami Garland. I have written this book. You know, please support me. And right next to me are those Limara girls praying people, you know? Anyway, so we did that. So we sold 300 books. So 300 by £1.50, that's how much money we made that year. And some of their other partners, you know, quickly jumped out and said, we're not here to give you an education on publishing, you know, here to have a profitable business. So, but the good thing about all that and the reason I share that story is because sometimes these things happen for a really good reason. It's to really make you think about why you're doing something. So if it really was because it was to be a money-making enterprise, then clearly I wasn't in the right business. I didn't know enough about it. But I got in touch with why I really wanted to do this, and it became the motor for our business, the mission, the vision, which was to get a book in every hand. And over the years, that has played out in very many ways. So what we then did is say, to get a book in every hand, and it was a very hard conversation. I don't know if Dio remembers that, you know, because there's so much pushback, but we understood by then why people weren't buying books, that it had nothing to do with price or even availability. They could, you know, we have a middle class, they could have bought the books and they weren't buying it. And we understood there's a lot of very basic work that needs to be done. We have to talk about why reading matters, and we have to go back to that, which sounded so strange to me because I grew up in a reading family. I've read all my life and my friends read, you know. So the idea that, you know, literally there are these fabulous people I know, I meet them in schools, I meet them everywhere, and they don't read. Why? They don't read to their children, they don't buy books, they don't have books in their homes. So it was a real sort of re-education, and because of that it changed our strategy going forward. So I visited the Hay Festival sheep farm, and I'm going, how can 200,000 people come to a sheep farm in the middle of Wales, and it's so hard to get here? And I thought, if they can do that, I can, you know. And it took them 14 years to break even, you know, so somehow we persuaded them, mainly again due to my partner here in crime, persuaded them to come and partner us in Nairobi and teach us how to run a festival. So we ran the Story Moja Hay Festival as a partnership for from 2000 and from 2008, and we did it together up until the Westgate siege in 2014. And anyway, so over the years, the kind of things that we did in the beginning, the Nyama Choma Fiesta, we ran book clubs. There was a time we used to have a book club every week, and nobody knew what a book club was. Eh? So it was, we did all kinds of shenanigans to get people there, but it would get these little, you know, sort of social halls. We would travel around Nairobi having little mini events, you know, and then unleash writers, yeah. Come, let's drink together, then unleash writers, like that. then the festival itself. And then we had lots of storytelling events, especially in universities, university colleges. We'd go around Hay Festival, storytelling was a huge component because we felt it's the way that people will access story and begin to understand the importance of story, only to discover that storytelling was actually dying right across many parts of Kenya, certainly, but I've seen it's not just Kenya, even around the region. Mm-hmm. And that really bothered me because I love telling stories. Then by 2009, we had lost so much money that my husband was like, you know what? This thing, at every life saving we've got, we're throwing into this thing, and there doesn't seem to be, you know, any sign that that things are turning around. Maybe this is not what we should be doing. And it was a very difficult time. And we thought, okay, there are a million Kenyans being born every day. Surely, if we started really concentrating, we were producing a few children's books, but if we really concentrated on that, surely there's opportunity there. And so we took the books to, there's a government agency called KICD that vets books. So we took our books to KICD and said, can you please approve our books? And I wish I'd brought you copies. I show you like what they would reject. They would reject like Finger and the Wind Game, which has a tree with eyes, cute eyes, and the hair is got the branch, you know, sort of green leafy stuff. They're little flowers clustered like ribbons. And it's a beautiful story, but rejected because trees don't have eyes. And, oh, I can't, anyway, those are stories for another day. We have fought, I mean, and then I realized this problem is so fundamental. There's such a resistance to creativity. Yeah. And we really then started spending a lot of time in schools designing and running sort of creative workshops, critical thinking workshops, doing all kinds of interesting things. But again, it was like draining money right, left, and center. Mm-hmm. And again, still got that ethos, you know, really, you know, we don't want to become, if you like, and of course I'd meet with Binya and he's like, how is it going? All right. Then what happened is in 2011, we changed direction again and really then hired the expertise from publishing circles, people who had our competitors, you know, we poached and they produced the books that KICD would approve. And I didn't bring them because when I bring them here, people say, your books are so tiny. I say, they have to be, you know, it's A5, they're very thin, they're, you know, 32 pages, but you have to print them on very, very light paper, and it's not just because, you know, you want to keep the cost down, and the cost is a huge factor in schools in Kenya, but it is also because with KICD, they've still got some very strange notions of the book will be heavy, it should be tiny so that kids can, you know, it's very strange things, but you know, things have improved. Anyway, we were still experimenting then with Cut Off My Tongue, with Sitawa, so having fun on stage. Then we broke through and got into schools, and our fortunes began to change. So, and by 2017, we got a set book, which is a literature textbook that that is studied in all schools in Kenya, all secondary schools in Kenya, and our fortunes really, you know, sort of moved on from there. So then 2014 happened, the Westgate siege, the festival that we'd been running all along. We got this incredible blow, and it kind of upended us and has had I think it's post, what do they call it, post-traumatic stress.
Yeah.
And it's been very hard to kind of get the festival mojo back where it was. We're still kind of readjusting, but we're back again February next year, and February 26th to March the 1st for those of you who would like to come. And in the meantime, we're about to launch our latest, which is Wildlife Detectives, a series of young adult books where our African children are reclaiming our wildlife heritage, because Africans are the best people in conservation in the whole wide world. That's why we still have wildlife parks. And yet the face of conservation right across Africa and the world is white, which I don't understand. So it's one of the areas that we're working on. So we're having a lot of fun. Yeah. Thank you.
Thank you, Mathoni. It's so important and useful to hear that history and how things, you know, you make mistakes and things, you learn important lessons and you build the ground for those who come after you as well. So, next up is Sitawa Namwalie, who is an award-winning Kenyan poet, playwright and performer. She's known for her unique dramatized poetry performances, which also include traditional Kenyan music, to create a feast for the senses, which we were treated to as well on Friday night. Cut Off My Tongue, her first performance, was at the Hay Festival in 2009, and we're really happy to have her here. So. Welcome.
Thank you very much. Thank you, Caitlin, and thank you for coming, everybody. You've heard about basically the infrastructure. They're talking about the infrastructure for creativity, for connection, for networking across the East African region. We're talking about innovations in the East African region, and I've actually... Each one of them, I've had an interaction with them. I've been to the Ubuntu Festival a couple of times. Story Moja is my publisher for my book, and Mudoni is my partner in crime for various wonderful and crazy adventures. And Sumaya I met during a Writivism festival. Absolutely critical for the existence of the individual creative, the individual writer. You've heard how Mudoni unleashes us. You know, it's like, you know, stealth. You know, she hides us, and then, you know, somebody's eating yamachoma and drinking beer, and then, you know, we're unleashed. You know, it really is that dramatic. I'm joking. And what I'm going to talk about is the individual, the role of the individual in this, in the innovation. So I became a creative, I became a writer, a poet in 2007. March 2007, to be specific, very close to when you began as well, and I came from the development world. So before that, I worked for the UN, for the World Bank, and so forth, and I had developed. I do not like groups. I developed a desire to forge out on my own. And really discover myself and my gift and explore it and figure out what do I do? How do I write? How do I create? Right? So, you know, for the first many years, I resisted any attempt at, you know, creating an institution or an organization around me. I was being a very, very individual and very focused in terms of my journey. Collaborating, absolutely, but also very, just very, very focused. And I think it's really important because, you know, you've heard the other side, and the cost of, what is the cost of, Mudoni's a fantastic writer, and she set up an institution which takes a humongous amount of time and energy, and you've heard what kind of journey it is. You're clearing the bush all the time and changing directions, and when you think you've gotten one direction, you have to clear the bush in another direction. And what does that mean for you being a writer? Because writing is all consuming. And so for me, I've been lucky that I've been able to just focus on being a writer. And really, I wouldn't have been able to do that either if it hadn't been for the infrastructure that they, my colleagues, have created, that the Binyavangas, that the, you know, all of them, Mudhonis, that they've created that so that I can be, because otherwise you're having to do everything. And you know, that's one of the things about being in a space where things are new. You spend and they're new, they can be new for, you know, 30 years. You know, so you're constantly like, oh, it's new, and you're like, okay, it's been 30 years, but it's new, and it is. Because what does it take to establish an industry? What does it take to establish a creative industry? And then, of course, I chose to become a poet. And advice, unless you really have to, don't do that. And I was very lucky that we have Mudhoni to publish, because who publishes poetry in Africa? Very, very hard. And then I became a playwright. Again, where do you get your a play published? You'll hear about, you know, the novels, etc., but you will not hear about the plays that are being produced. And getting them published is really, you know, is challenging. I think one of the things that I have been interested in terms of my own journey, and one of the things that I'm finding that is creating the innovation is around language. Early on, in 2010, I was fortunate enough to be a fellow of the Sundance Theatre Lab, and it was an East African lab. And, you know, so you can hear this, the East Africa, this collaboration, that we're doing things together, yeah? And there was an accidental conversation around language. So the Kenyans and the Ugandans usually write and produce in English. The Rwandans were writing at that time in French and Kinyarwanda. And then the Tanzanians were writing in Kiswahili. And we're sitting down one day and have this amazing conversation and discovering that French and Kinyarwanda, you can correct me, your colleagues, your country people said this, French and Kinyarwanda is very close. So if you write in Kinyarwanda and you write in French, the translation doesn't take very much. You're not losing a lot when you do that. To write in English is a very different thing. English is so alien to the structure of, in relation to the structure of our languages, that it behaves like a humongous barrier. And language is not just the words. It brings so much. You know, when people talk only about language, I look at them and I'm like, no, it's not just that I can speak this language. It is the whole environment that you create with a language. And the whole environment that a people creates, even outside of a language. There's all forms of communication. For us, the Kenyans and Ugandans, to be effective in communicating, we have to become incredibly good at English so that we can break it apart, so we can tear it apart, so that we can exit. We're exiting using the same language to exit, so that we can generate the energies that we need to be able to communicate in the ways that we need to be communicating. And I think one of the most wonderful experiences for me in terms of what language does and language's energy is Sheng. So there's a language of the youth in Kenya, in Nairobi mainly, I was fortunate enough one day to go somewhere, and then I heard it, and I heard it outside of Kenya. So I could hear that Sheng is just energy. It's pure, amazing youth energy. And so then when I came back, I started to incorporate it in my work. So I do not speak Sheng. I sort of understand it. I'm not sure that I understand it. I think I understand it. But I then started collaborating with young people who then will translate my work. And then we are co-creating. And I think the one of the most exciting things at the moment is Eric Wainaina, who is one of Kenya's leading musicians, has put together a musical training workshop with New York University and the Sundance Theatre Lab, and we have 12 projects. And since 2016, and we are creating new musicals. And I'm collaborating with a young woman whom I met on the original trip that allowed me to start using Shen. So she's my composer, and so we're creating a musical in Sheng, hip hop, using rap, and also using traditional my beloved traditional musical instruments, which won't leave me alone anymore. They've taken over my life, as well as Western instruments. So I think the role of the individual. You must go out on a limb and keep creating, because the infrastructure is being further developed, and it needs content. So that's one of the things that I wanted to talk about. And the other thing, I think the last thing is that using creativity in a different way. So in 2016 we had a horrific spate of women being stripped in Nairobi when they were because of inappropriate dress. You know, our pushback in terms of the Me Too movement. And so I developed a project called Our Grandmother's Miniskirt, which is going to document the women's dress in the 60s, 70s, and 80s. My mother used to wear miniskirts up to here, you know, hot pants and all the rest of it. And so I'm crowdsourcing these photographs, and we're going to have an exhibition at the Macmillan Library. You know, so you've heard about the Macmillan Library. Again, the infrastructure being, you know, developed and redeveloped. And then it'll be available online, and it'll also be a book published. So if you're Kenyan, please send me your photographs of your mother and your grandmother, because this is, So I think I'll stop there, because I don't think
we have time. I feel inspired to hear about the interaction between the individual artists and the infrastructure, and all of the work that we need to keep doing to further that. And I'm so happy that we were able to have this conversation. We have an event in here in 10 minutes. So you can either stay and rest or come out and join us in the foyer. I would just like to say a big thank you to all of the speakers today, and please give them another round. I know we used a few acronyms and referred to particular things that some people might not be familiar with, so please feel free to ask the speakers. And also Binya Vanga Wainaina, who was mentioned several times. We've done a tribute to him yesterday. He was a Kenyan writer and founding editor of Kwani Publishing in Nairobi. And you can read more about him on page 11 in the brochure, just in case you're not familiar. So yeah, thank you once again. And,
thank you so much for listening to this Writivism podcast. It is part of our Unbreakable Bond series. We shall be back next week with another podcast.